Concordia Bible Institute, housed on the campus of Concordia University, Wisconsin. This is your opportunity every week to read, mark, learn, and take to heart the sacred scriptures with Dr. John Seleska, director of the Concordia Bible Institute, and me, your host and fellow learner, John Oberdeck, professor of theology and coordinator for lay studies here at CUW. We have been working our way through the book of Genesis and doing so in quite detail. And today we have come to Genesis chapter 26 and bring us up to speed on what's happening in the book of Genesis as we approach this chapter, John.
All right, just a few sentences from our last podcast, which had to do with the birth of those twins to Rebekah, Esau and Jacob. And at the end of that section, you'll recall that Esau sold his birthright because he, as we described him, was somewhat profane, irreligious, lived according to the flesh, that life to him was not more than meat or drink, but that seems to have been substantive for him. And so he treated it pretty cavalierly, and we're going to see how important that is as we get into the next chapters here in Genesis, chapters 26 and 27 today. So that brings us really to the chapter, except to suggest that when this all occurs and Esau sells his birthright, that Luther remarks that this really means that God is in fact saying, I want Jacob to be the firstborn. So he's abrogating the law of the firstborn, saying, I want Jacob to be the firstborn. And so consequently, that's what's going to happen. In chapter 26, then, we begin, of course, that there's an interesting little point that we need to repeat here. Isaac realizes there's a famine in the land, and he's thinking like his father that perhaps he should go down to Egypt while the famine lasts. But the Lord appears to him and tells him not to do that. I don't want you to go down there, but I've given this land to you, and I'd like you to remain here, and I'm going to bless you. And he, in a sense, then repeats the blessing. I'm going to bless you and give you descendants as many as the stars in the sky. And so he insists that Isaac should remain in the land at this point. Even though there's a famine, I'll be taking care of you.
So he's not supposed to go to Egypt.
He's not supposed to avoid that completely. Right, and he said, I'll bless you because of your father Abraham. I think that's verse 5, where he says, I'm going to bless you because of your father Abraham, who kept my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. And I think, to me, that's a fascinating little statement because it suggests, I think, that there already was a kind of accepted body of materials, a kind of code, if you will, of conduct for the people already at that time. It's interesting that Luther makes this statement that he believes that Abraham kept a record of everything until his death there in chapter 25. So perhaps all of that had been carried along by Abraham himself, and that's why he can make the statement here, and that Isaac would understand it.
Yeah, so this was not, none of that information was lost.
No, I think not. I think Abraham, I don't know, and I don't think we have any specific record, and I am not real sure why Luther makes the statement. He doesn't explain it, except he did believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to believe it also, so that when you talk about oral tradition, I'm always a little nervous, and I think all of us are, if you've ever seen some of these skits on TV where you tell one person, then another, and then another, and at the end you get this story, and it's so mixed up that it has no familiarity at all to the original story which was spoken. So I'm not real happy with the idea that these things were carried along by an oral kind of tradition. Because too much can be lost under those circumstances, and I do believe our fathers, the fathers here, also understood that.
Mm-hmm. So instead of going to Egypt, he goes down to the land of the Philistines.
Yeah, he goes to Gerar, and there again he meets a familiar friend. Now I don't know if it's the same one or not. Abimelech is the name. It means something like royal father. ruling father. So it was, I think, kind of a common name. Now, you need to remember that there perhaps were as many as 70 or 80 years which had passed since that incident in chapter 20, where you remember that Abraham said that his wife was his sister and got into big trouble doing that. And now Isaac does the same thing. She's my sister. Well,
now, I wonder if this had been a story in the family history where Abraham and Sarah sitting around the table would tell stories like this, and Isaac heard about this from the past. Oh, remember when we went down to Egypt, and remember what happened there? Yeah, we better not do that again.
Yeah.
But then he repeats it. I mean, yes. Isaac picks this up and does the very same thing.
You wonder, although I don't know if it was a family thing, but it could have been somewhat of a custom among these people in an attempt often to prevent what Isaac hopes to prevent here by saying she's my sister, because she was a beautiful woman, and consequently someone may have taken her as his wife, and he didn't want that to happen. Perhaps they would have taken his life. He was afraid for his own life. And I think we probably should remember this overarching theme of the Messiah, that he is now the messianic seed carrying that responsibility on himself, and he realizes that if he should lose his life, everything is lost. I think if we keep that uppermost in mind throughout our discussions, we'll understand some of the things which are done, because they're done with a mind toward preventing anything that would interfere with the accomplishment of that promise.
And when we think of later generations, when there's a multitude of people carrying the line forward, losing one may not be that big of a disaster, but now there is only one.
Yeah. It's just Isaac.
It's just Isaac.
Isaac knows that also, and I think he must have had something of that in mind when he tells his wife to say, "You're my sister," and he tells her, tells the Philistines that she's his sister, and he gets himself into trouble because, is it verse 8 or 9 there, where it says, on one occasion after some length of time, that Abimelech looked out his window and he saw, now the King James uses the word sporting. It's an interesting Hebrew word, tzakak, the same stem from which Isaac comes. You know, Isaac'd him, mocked and made fun of, and it's making fun, really, you're funning with his wife. Sort of these, playful liberties that a husband might take with his wife, but surely not with his sister.
Yes, yeah, so, well, verse 9 in the ESV puts it this way: when he had been there a long time, Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked out of a window and saw Isaac laughing with Rebekah, his wife.
Well,
maybe he was tickling her. Maybe that's what's going on.
Tickler, flirting with her, or flirting amorously with her, like a husband would do with a wife, but not with his sister.
Now, this also says something interesting about the culture of the day, where Isaac and his father, for that matter, are fearful of their lives because of the beauty of their wives.
Yeah.
It would seem to say there's a certain lawlessness in the land that would allow them to be in danger. You just wouldn't think of that going from one state to another today, that, well, what does that mean for me if my wife is attractive?
And it is interesting also, is it not, that in both cases with Abraham and Abimelech, and now Isaac and Abimelech, that both of them were frightened after they found out. And that Abimelech said, somebody could have done something, taken your life, or there could have been guilt on our part for having taken her because she's your sister, or thinking she was your sister and not your wife. So both of them there seems to be a code of ethics among these heathen people, the Philistines.
Yeah, which should have ameliorated this fear of Abraham or Isaac, because the way that Abimelech then expresses it, what is this you've done to us? One of the people might easily have lain with your wife, and you would have brought guilt upon us.
Right.
So Abimelech is worried about the guilt.
Yeah. There must have been an essential sort of morality which guided these people in their lives, and their consciences would not have permitted them to accomplish what Isaac seems to have feared. So it is it's interesting to see that still was at least a guiding principle, I guess, among those people.
Well, then what happens?
Well, then what happens?
They clear up this matter of who's married to who and who's available and who's not.
And then what happens is, of course, that it says from then on, after that point, that the Lord really did bless Isaac as he had blessed Abraham. And he, materially, he was a very wealthy man. He had herds and flocks and servants. And the Philistines began to be envious of him. The Lord blessed him. And they could see that he was becoming more and more powerful. And as a matter of fact, Abimelech makes that statement. You're more powerful than we. And he was a little bit nervous about what that might mean, perhaps to his people, perhaps also to himself. And so he asks Isaac to take his flocks and his family, perhaps the servants also, and to leave the area. And then Isaac does that, goes to the valley of Gerar, and he places his tent and his flocks there. We also have this couple of incidents that occurred with the wells that had been dug. Evidently, the Philistines, again in their envy, had filled them up, and now the servants of Isaac redug them. And you need to remember that water was very precious in those days at that point for those people, and so this was kind of a hostile act to fill those wells. To have them redug was not unimportant to maintain the kind of life for the cattle and the flocks and for the family that was necessary for a real good life.
Hmm.
So we have those. One of them is, I think, called Sitna. One of the wells is called Sitna. The two names mean hostilities, I guess, and struggles, so that they struggled for, and there are hostilities over against these wells.
Mm-hmm. And water was so precious.
Yeah,
you had
was.
To be very careful with what you did with water. So to damage a well, why, that could bring severe repercussions
yes,
to the community.
Yes, it would certainly limit what could be done, and it would limit what perhaps would be the possibilities in that area, and it would maybe motivate, in this case, Isaac to move on, to get out of the area where he would be less of a threat.
Yeah, well, finally he does dig a well, and they don't quarrel over it or fight over it, and he names it Rehoboth.
Yes, yes. And so things seem to have calmed down at that point. And then this interesting thing again that Isaac does in verses of 24, I guess, there, and 23 and 24, he, first of all, he builds an altar, and he sacrifices, and he then calls on the name of the Lord. Now, this is what Abraham did way back in chapter 12, if you recall. We had spoken extensively about the idea, and Luther makes the statement that it was not so much for the purpose of sacrifice that they built these altars, but for the purpose of providing a gathering place for the people of God so they could hear a word from their God. So as the sacrifice, I suppose, was made, and let's just suppose again that it was a lamb, that in this case, I guess, Abraham in one case, in this case, Isaac would proclaim the Lord. And he called on the name of the Lord. Now, we mentioned to you again earlier that in the Hebrew, that's Bashem. And whenever the baith in the Hebrew is found in front of that word for name, shame, it means more than simply to pray. It means to proclaim the Lord. And so in the face of that sacrifice which was being made, I think we could project into the future to the ultimate sacrifice toward which this one would point, shadowing the great offering and sacrifice to come to end all these sacrifices. But he could proclaim the Lord, the shepherd who would lay down his life for the sheep, or of course the lamb in this case, who would lay down his life. May I add just a statement there? The word Elohim is used also, and Luther says that when he uses what he uses here, calling on God and the name of the Lord, the name Elohim is a plural. And Luther says that he understood the mystery of the Trinity in using the name Elohim. The Lord, of course, Yahweh would be the singular, but Elohim the plural. And so that Luther says, you will not be going wrong when you understand the name Jehovah to mean our Lord Jesus Christ, God's Son, so that he, in fact, then proclaims that Lord, and he calls on that Lord and proclaims him to the people there, but that he understood the mystery of the triune God, that this also suggests, as it says, I am the God of Abraham. It mentions here also, well, he says Abraham's alive. So he understood the resurrection and the incarnation, so that he was really theologically very advanced, we would say. Now, I'm sure that a lot of Old Testament scholars may not agree with him, but I agree with Luther.
Okay. Well, we'll agree with Luther's comments a little bit more as we go into our second segment for this afternoon's discussion of chapter 26. But for right now, we're going to take a little break. We'll be back in just a moment to Christ in Every Word. In the meantime, I want to ask you to consider this question. What is most valuable in higher education? How do you prioritize all the knowledge to be gained at an institution of higher learning? Concordia University, Wisconsin, located on the shores of Lake Michigan here in Mequon, Wisconsin, just north of Milwaukee, is an institution that is committed to excellence in learning, but at the same time realizes that excellence isn't enough without development in vocation. And what is vocation? You see, we believe God works through our vocations, our callings, those careers and roles we're educated to fulfill in order to meet the needs of our neighbor. The mission statement of Concordia puts it this way. Concordia University, Wisconsin is a Lutheran higher education community committed to helping students develop in mind, body, and spirit for service to Christ in the church and the world. You can learn more about the over 60 programs offered at Concordia by visiting www.cuw.edu. And we're hoping that you enjoy listening to our podcasts here for Christ in Every Word, and we encourage you to support this ministry. You can go to our website, www.concordiabible.org, and click there on the contribute page, and you'll find ways in which you can support Christ in Every Word. And I should let you know that right now we're thinking about and planning some very interesting things for the Concordia Bible Institute coming up in the future. We're in discussions right now about the possibility of beginning some online short certificate classes with the faculty here at Concordia University that you can take through the Concordia University e-learning as part of the Concordia Bible Institute, perhaps for a certificate, perhaps just for your own edification. But imagine for a moment having the opportunity to take a short course, see some videos and so forth, with some of the professors here at the university. I think you'd find that quite stimulating and informative. And look forward to more information about that. I think within the coming months there'll be a lot that we say about it. So visit www.concordiabible.org. And now let's get back to the topic at hand, which is chapter 26 of Genesis. Welcome back to Christ in Every Word, Genesis chapter 26. The family of Isaac and Rebekah and their twin boys, Esau and Jacob. Where are we in the story now, John?
Well, just to round out what we had talked about initially and mentioned the altar which was built and calling on the name of the Lord or proclaiming the Lord, and that this provided a gathering place for the people of God to hear a word from their Lord. And I would suggest also that because Isaac was the one who was blessed, the Lord blessed him, that he would probably have been the one also who would do the proclaiming at these, quote, services or gathering times for the people when they would come to listen to a proclamation so that they could be edified and nurtured in the word of the Messiah. And it provided, I think, peace in that whole family and in the culture, and perhaps it even influenced the people around, because at this time we find that Abimelech and Phicol, the captain of his army, and one of his friends came to see Isaac and to engage in peace talks. And eventually, of course, they did come to an understanding and a peaceful understanding, and it says that they went away in peace In the Septuagint uses the word soterios. Really, it's salvation. It's the word which is used also in the Aaronic benediction. Lord make his face shine upon you and give you peace. And it really means salvation. And so I take that to mean that he announced, in a sense, peace and salvation to these heathen people. Why would they not be evangelists? And I do think Abraham was an evangelist, as Luther did believe, and I do think Isaac would have learned that from his father Abraham and would be the same, and that we see a little bit of that here. And maybe that's what created some of the circumstances that we mentioned before about the morality of these people.
Where is that reference? You said in the Septuagint to the word for salvation. Which verse are we talking about?
It's the word peace, that when Abimelech and Phicol are sent away after that conference.
And Isaac sent them on their way, and they departed from him in peace.
Peace, yes.
Okay, that was verse 31.
Yeah.
So that's the word for salvation.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's the Greek word in the Septuagint.
Yeah.
Well, what does shalom mean? I mean, it means a lot of things.
Okay.
To be whole, to be sound, to be safe, completeness, health, ease. It has a host of meanings, and I suppose could ultimately mean salvation also. At least I think if you bundle them all together, you might come up with that concept.
Things
too
are going well.
Well,
when you have shalom.
Very well.
Yes, very well. Things didn't go so well then for Esau,
no,
which comes up next at the very end of the chapter.
What's Esau
up to?
Esau wasn't listening. he was one of those sons that went his own way, did his own thing, and was, as I think we've mentioned, profane and fleshly minded. And it says that he took wives from among the Philistines, heathen wives. Well, we know that if you take heathen wives and if they worship false gods, that you're going to fall into it. We know how godly Solomon was initially in his life, and yet he took heathen wives and began to worship idols. And a man of that strength who had written Proverbs and Ecclesiastes and Song of Solomon, a man that had written those scriptures, that he would fall seems almost unbelievable. And so we can see it happening perhaps here in the life of Esau also. Mm-hmm. And so he takes heathen wives, and this thing was it brought sorrow to the lives of both Isaac and Rebekah, and she didn't want it to happen with her son Jacob. She knew how important he was, because he's the one who had been blessed, or is going to be blessed, we'll find now in chapter 27.
And that's where the great deception takes place.
That is the great deception. This is going to take us a little time, but
yeah,
we'll need to go into it.
Yeah, because Esau's the firstborn. Isaac loves Esau. He's going to bless Esau, and he asks Esau to prepare him a meal so that Isaac can then give his blessing to his son Esau. And it does not happen that way.
Now, we know from chapter 25 a little bit about Esau. He was an outdoorsman, he was a hunter, and he was Isaac's favorite. Now, we had mentioned, I think you mentioned last time, that it's not a good idea for parents to play favorites with their children, but it evidently was true of both Rebekah and Isaac in the case of Esau and Jacob.
Jacob was Rebekah's favorite. And he was so different from Esau.
Very much.
He wasn't
different.
The hunter. He wasn't an outdoorsman.
No.
He spent his time in the library.
And it's interesting that I think I mentioned last time that he's called a plain man, aplastos in the Greek. The Septuagint translates it that way. I think that's an interesting word because he did not form to the culture. He was straightforward. He was sort of innocent and simple in the way in which he saw things. And this is going to be very much out of character for him. And we see him protesting this attempt to deceive his father.
Because whose idea is it to deceive the father? Is it Jacob's idea to do this?
Not his idea. It's Rebekah's idea.
It's mom. It's mom who's pushing him into it.
She wants him to deceive Isaac because, now Luther says she didn't sin in this, interestingly. He says she didn't sin in this. Neither of them sinned in this, although we're going to look at it and say, I don't know about that. But this was the only plan because, as Luther says, they tried to convince Isaac that God had said that the elder shall serve the younger. If you remember from chapter 25, I think it's verse 23, where it says, these two nations are struggling in your womb, and two people shall be separated from your bowels. One nation or people shall be stronger than the other, and the elder shall serve the elder shall serve the younger.
So what you're saying is that it was Isaac who was going against God's will when he was attempting to put the blessing on Esau.
That she saw
the prophecy
him.
Had already been given that it was going to be the other way around.
Right. She saw him as a stubborn one. He couldn't be convinced. Well, we'll have to convince him in our own way. She took things into her own hands, and I know you can protest and say, wouldn't God have worked it out? Well, with sinful human beings, we are prone not to let the Lord work it out quite the way he should perhaps be permitted to let things work out, but he uses what we do, unfortunately. Often it's not quite the right way to go, but it does work out to our advantage. And it isn't quotes that we don't find events like this in the scriptures of people, quotes, outright lying, because really Jacob did do that when Isaac asks him straightforward, are you Esau? And he said, yes, I am. I mean, you couldn't say it more clearly than he did.
Said, yes, I am.
I really am.
Yeah. So Esau's out hunting, and while he's out hunting, then this discussion takes place between Rebekah and Jacob. And Jacob's got a lot of misgivings about traveling.
He's going to be found out. I'll be found out. What if my father finds out that I've tried to disguise myself and pretend to be something that I'm not, and I'll receive a curse. I mean, he'll curse me rather than bless me.
Yeah.
This is not going to work out well, or at least he didn't see the end of it as working out very well. That's an interesting idea that he just really didn't want to do this. It was not characteristic of him. But nevertheless, his mother insisted, you're going to do this, and I'm going to see to it because I have this promise, and this is what God has said, and we're going to see to it that God's promise is carried out. You're the child of promise. Now, Isaac knows that.
Mm-hmm. So Rebekah prepares the meal, and Rebekah prepares the disguise, so to speak.
Yes.
Because Jacob is worried. He's not a hairy man. Even though Isaac's eyesight is poor, his touch is going to be good. So what does he do?
And his hearing still evidently is pretty good.
Yeah.
So the meal is prepared. The savory food, tasty food, that's the food that Isaac really liked. And Esau knew that. It's a game. And he, of course, was a hunter, and he would smell of game, so that his sense of smell was pretty good also, since he detected that when he got close to Jacob, and he said, he says something like this, the voice is that of Jacob, hand is that of Esau, and the aroma, the smell also is of Esau, the hunter, and so it must be Esau. Mm-hmm. And so he gathers that. He's probably a pretty good detective in his old age. He's got all the information he needs to come to, quotes, what he thinks is the right conclusion, because he is suspect. That voice just doesn't sound right.
Well, Isaac is also wondering, how come you're back so soon?
Yeah. Well, he asked that question.
Yeah. How come you're back
so soon?
And then
it gets even worse on Jacob's part, because he says, the Lord, your God, sent the game to me.
God granted me success. It happened right away. So here I am. I'm
so he brings
already.
God in on it also.
Yeah.
You couldn't. Uh-huh. I don't think it could be a bigger lie than that. But nevertheless, we'll have to go on, and it's going to go on, and it's going to be successful from any human point of view, I guess.
Then his father Isaac said to him, come near and kiss me, my son. So he came near and kissed him. Hmm. And Isaac smelled the smell of his garments. Ah.
Yeah.
And blessed him and said, there it is.
Here it is. Now he gives that blessing. And the interesting repercussions from all of that that follow will break up the family. I mean, when he finds out what Jacob has done, and so he comes back from the field, and Esau does, after all of this has transpired, and almost immediately Esau is there. He prepares this savory dish and he brings it in. And then, of course, Isaac asks, who was that that came in before? Because then he realizes, of course, something has happened. There's a scam. This deceit has been successful, and he's played along with it, and now the blessing has been spoken. And I've spoken the blessing, and it can't be recalled. Now, it's interesting, because I think any of us would say, well, after he'd blessed him, I'm sorry, I did the wrong thing, and that was the wrong person, and I wanted to bless Esau, but he couldn't. He couldn't retract what he had said, interestingly.
What he had said to Jacob, thinking it was Esau, was things such as, let peoples serve you and nations bow mm-hmm. down to you, be lord over your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. So that's how do you retract that?
You can't. And I've often tried to think of some equivalent today. And I suppose if you said that if you, as a pastor, you might have baptized a scoundrel who came to you to be baptized for whatever purpose, certainly not any religious purpose, and you might have baptized him, and then you found out he had something else in mind apart from becoming a member of the congregation, you couldn't retract the baptism.
You can't, you can't unbaptize.
Yeah. You can't unring the bell.
You can't. Okay.
It's finished. And
well, at least there's another bell that that Isaac tries to ring for Esau, because he's now, since there's still a blessing that's left for Esau. Yeah. It's not
the
firstborn.
It's interesting. His complaint too. If you get a load, Esau's complaint, and he says, well, this isn't he correctly named the supplanter, one who takes the place of another? First of all, he deceived me. I mean, now, listen, he fooled me out of my birthright. Well, come on, he had sold the birthright for a mess of pottage, but he sort of blames Jacob for this. I suppose you mentioned this last time, I think, that maybe he thought it was all kind of fun and games, this whole thing.
Yeah, no one's going to take this seriously.
Yeah.
But the blessing then that Esau gets from his father, the second blessing, by your sword you shall live and you shall serve your brother.
Yeah.
There it is. And when you grow restless, you shall break his yoke from your neck.
Yeah. Now then.
So there's going to be turmoil from here on out.
It really did create a lot.
And then the next verse says how bad this gets. Now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, the days of mourning for my father are approaching. Then I will kill my brother Jacob. So
now,
murder is in his heart.
Now let's carry this a little higher. Jacob is the seed now. And if Esau represents humanity by nature and carnal mind is enmity against God, hates him, wants him out of the way, I'm somewhat reminded of that parable that Christ told in Luke. I think it's chapter 19, where this nobleman went out to receive a kingdom and to return. And after he had left, his citizens said, we don't want this man to rule over us. And it's how we are by nature. We're going to rule ourselves. We don't want to abide by what God has to say or anyone else. I'm my own person. It's how we are by nature. And we'd like him out of the way so we can rule. And I think Esau really expresses that innate thought of all of ours, that sinful human nature of ours, this hostility toward God.
Well, and now if the promise is with Jacob, then that's still that one single line.
Yeah.
There's only one.
Yeah.
It's Jacob. And if Esau plans to kill the line, he's killing Christ, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. If you can see the devil behind all of this, saying, hey, if I can get him, we got it.
Yeah.
This would be it. We'd have him, and this whole promise from Genesis 3:15, you know, would be taken care of. I'm sure he must be thinking of that all along throughout the whole history of this. And it's obvious that the Lord is always one step ahead. But it is interesting that this does, I think, carry us a little higher than just what you see superficially here.
Yeah.
These aren't just stories back there, but they have to do with the gospel itself, really.
So Esau is planning murder.
Yeah.
Jacob is at risk.
Right.
Isaac is losing his faculties and couldn't tell one from the other. He gets deceived. And Rebekah is busy plotting. Well, let's leave the household of Isaac and Rebecca and return in our next episode of The Patriarchs. It does sound like a television soap opera at times, doesn't it?
It does. We'll see how this works out.
Yeah, we're going to have to... We'll have to wait till next time to see how this works out, because we really are running out of time. But I wonder if you could do us the favor of mentioning Christ in every word to your family and friends. Concordia Bible Institute, its director and advisory boards, is committed to the study of God's Word, and we see that as the mission of the Institute. If you can help us out, we'd appreciate it a great deal. You can find out how at www.concordiabible.org. You can click on the Contribute page, and you'll find several ways in which you can support the message of Christ in every word. And until we meet again and have more opportunity and move into chapter 28 and find out just what happens next, God's blessings be yours.